This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. A new emergency shelter is opening for homeless, neglected, and abused children today. Nearly 2,000 young people were referred to the Bexar County Juvenile Probation Department in the first half of the year, from runaways to youths with Class A and B misdemeanors like assault and burglary. For troubled youth, maintaining normalcy is key to healthy personal growth and preventing further problems with law enforcement. The Roy Moss Youth Alternatives Short-Term Emergency Shelter, The Bridge, is providing 24-hour residential care, food, clothing, education, and life skill training for at-risk youth. How will these and other efforts aid abused, neglected, and at-risk children in Bexar County? That's our topic for today, and we invite you to call in with your questions and comments. 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Maybe were you a youth who had to go to the Roy Moss Youth Alternatives? What was your stay like? Have you had contact with them as a counselor? We would love to hear your story as well. 210-614-8980. Email us at thesource@tpr.org and tweet us at @tprsource. We're joined this afternoon by Bill Wilkerson. He is the CEO of Roy Moss Youth Alternatives. Also with us is Maricela Morales. He is the deputy chief with the Bexar County Juvenile Probation Department. And Joe Macumba, he is the retired Navy chief petty officer and a former resident of the Bridge Shelter. Welcome to The Source, all of y'all. It's great to have you here today.
Thank you.
Bill, tell me about what's happening today. You're doing a ribbon cutting.
We are at 3 o'clock at 3119 West Avenue. We are cutting the ribbon on a project that's been 2.5 years in the making, $1.5 million, brand new modern facility to help us implement the kind of restorative practices that we want to be able to use on children who've been removed from their homes for neglect, abuse, or just abandoned by the adults in their lives.
So it's a new facility, and before y'all have been in a former furniture store.
Yeah, since 1983, we have been in a building that was originally built as a furniture store, and it houses several of our programs, administrative offices, counseling.
I mean, it's fine. You do what you got to do.
We do what we got to do, and so the back portion of the building has been serving. Since we moved there, it has served over 11,000 kids since 1983 who needed temporary shelter. But again, nowadays we're trying to be more restorative with the kids. We want them to live in a more home-like atmosphere, less institutional. And that's what this building, this new building, allows us to do. So the Bridge is going to move to that new location, and then we're actually going to be using the old space to create some new programming.
So the new location, how is it different than the old location? I mean, it's not a furniture store.
It is not a converted furniture store. So, for example, all the rooms have windows. We have dormers. We have colorful murals on the walls. We have specific facility for nurse appointments. And instead of having to, have that in a room somewhere that also doubles as a conference room, that type of thing. So the whole idea is to create a space so that our kids have something to allude to that is better than that from which they came.
So have you had some of the kids who have been at the original facility, the furniture store, and they walk through the new one, and what do their faces look like?
Oh, yeah, they really light up. They have been involved in actually helping us kind of finish out things, so making the beds, new comforters, putting out sheets. We're going to have some of their artwork hanging in the new facility. Just a whole variety of things that they wanted to have input on, and I think they're very excited about the move.
So these children, what kind of circumstances have they gone through before?
Well, we have really a very wide variety of circumstances. Right after I started working at Roy Moss, we had a kid, for example, who's, I think he was 11 years old, and he had a sister who was 7 or 8. The police found them in a field in the middle of the night, in nothing but their pajamas. It turns out that mom was trying to commit suicide, couldn't go through with it, asked the boy to shoot her. And he couldn't, of course, couldn't do it.
The boy was how old?
11. And so mom, passed out, and the boy got his sister and just got out of there. And they eventually went to our, they came to the bridge. They eventually went to the Midland facility and then got placed with a foster family. But we see a whole variety of circumstances, parents who withhold medication from their children as a form of punishment. I'm talking about asthma medication and things like that, where the child becomes very uncomfortable very quickly. It just depends on the situation.
So when you call it the bridge, how does that concept, that metaphor, fit into when these children end up at your facility? What are you bridging them to?
We're trying to bridge them to a future. Their past is not indicative of what their future can be. And that's what we're trying to persuade them to understand, that through counseling, through enrollment in education, through life skills work, that they can become strong adults. In fact, we use the Frederick Douglass quote all the time, that it's easier to build strong children than it is to fix broken men and women.
And the children, I'm sure they come in and they're just grateful to have a place, but did they know something, a place like this would exist?
They did not necessarily know that a place like this would exist, and they're not necessarily grateful. They're going through a lot of trauma. These kids still love their parents in spite of what's been done to them. And
it's complicated.
It is. I mean, we had a volunteer who several years ago was selected as the United Way Volunteer of the Year, and he actually came to Roy Moss back in the early 80s, actually lived with Roy when he got out of care for a little while. And we took a picture of him receiving the award. The first thing he wanted to do was to send it to the parents who whose rights had been terminated, 30 years ago.
Those bonds are always going to be there.
They are.
But you have to figure out how to maintain those bonds, protect that integrity, make sure that you don't do anything to try to cast shadows or throw shade at the parents,
exactly.
But build these children up so that they can go on and not repeat those cycles?
Exactly. And we want them to have a healthy relationship with their parents.
All right. Well, we're talking about a new day at Roy Moss Youth Alternatives this afternoon. We're going to hear some more compelling stories. We're going to hear from a former resident, and he's going on to bigger and greater things. His story is coming up in just a moment. Also, this is the new building for Roy Moss Youth Alternatives is opening up new opportunities as we figure out ways to help those who are victims of sex trafficking here in Bexar County. What's going on with that? And we have phones that are open if you want to call in with your stories or comments, observations. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We're going to be right back. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Since 1976, the Roy Moss Youth Alternatives has provided services to abused, neglected, and high-risk youth here in Bexar County. But today, there is the opening of a new bridge, a new chapter for Roy Moss and the organization's ability to help local children. The bridge is a short-term emergency shelter for runaway, abused, and homeless children. We're talking about the state of abused children in Bexar County today and what's available to help them, and we invite you to call in. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Now, we're joined by Joe McComba. He is a retired Navy Chief Petty Officer, but he's also a former resident of the Bridge Shelter. And Joe, welcome to The Source. It's great to have you here.
Hey, thank you.
So when were you at the Bridge? When were you at Roy Moss?
No, I want to say I was there in the early 80s. I was in and out.
So you must have been pretty young.
Yes, I am. Okay. I was about maybe 8 or 9 when I was in and out of there.
And so, do you want to tell us what happened?
So, Bill was saying earlier, a lot of things happen to a lot of kids. There's 10 of us total together in my family.
All your brothers and sisters?
Brothers and sisters, all biological, same mom. And I'm the oldest out of all of us. So it just tells you how young I am. And they took us out for certain reasons, like being malnourished, maltreatment, being beaten in the back, any type of physical abuse that you can think happened to us. It's a little bit easier for me to share it because I was provided counseling services. It takes a lot to be where I'm at right now through the support and that I have been given through the military, and not only that, but the life skills I was provided through Roy Moss, through Meadowlands. And I'm looking forward to seeing this new facility. One thing I remember is the smell of this old fridge. Every time I walk in there, to the right-hand side is the kitchen, and I smell this powdered milk, you know, the powdered eggs, the milk. It's a certain smell. It's something you can't escape. But
Well, got you ready for the Navy.
Oh, yes, I did.
But do you remember your first day when you were there?
Yes, I do. For me, it was difficult because it's, of course, I'm away from my mom, my dad, and my stepfather.
That's all you knew at the time.
Yes, most definitely. And so going to an environment that I'm not even no windows either, like Bill was saying, it's amazing. Just mats on the floor. There's one open room, and you just kind of go there. You don't know what to expect. But the way I ended up there was where my mom and my father had to attend a court hearing, you know, before their rights were going to get terminated, which was in 1984, and they never showed up to court. We were there left, me and myself, my brother and my sister. There was just three of us at that time. And so they removed all of us. But there were 43 reports of us being physically abused, and before they even decided to even have a court hearing for that. So it's just a matter of time. People talk about when's the appropriate time to actually remove a kid from that type of environment. Well, you don't know. I was fortunate enough that I was removed at that age.
And so, but you were the oldest boy of the group.
I'm the oldest.
And so that meant that you had to play a leadership role with your siblings.
Yes. So for me, it was really difficult because I saw myself as a caregiver, as the one taking care of my brother and sister. And so it was real hard for me. Until this day, I still feel like that. I don't see my brother or my sister or the others because of, if I put myself in that position, I know that it will affect my current family and my status I don't want to divert back to that type of environment or those type of skills or to repeat the cycle. I want to break the cycle. And right now I'm married. I have a wife and five kids, so they keep me pretty busy.
That's awesome. And so also I understand you're getting ready to go into law school.
Yes. This December I graduate from St. Mary's University with my master's in public administration. And then I'm going to apply and go to St. Mary's University for law school. For fall of next year. And my goal, and the reason I do that is because I want to ensure that I can help as many kids as possible that went through the system or are going through the system, that they know that I'm there and that other people that are there to help. If we all pitch in together, the impact is just so much. Just talking to someone, supporting them, just being there for them is enough. You know, there are staff still at Roy Moss Youth Alternatives that are working there that when I was there. So they've been working for over 30 years now. So I still keep in touch with them. I visit them. I consider that my home. You know, when they say, when I was in the Navy, I go back on leave, I'll say, oh, I'm going to San Antonio. One of my stops would be Meadowlands or Bernie, you know, go out there and see them or go see the kids and just talk to them.
And you tell them your story, the kids?
I tell them my story. As a matter of fact, it was an honor, if I may. The kids from Meadowlands, a charter school, they actually came to my retirement ceremony, the high school. And
When I retired
from the Navy about a year ago, and it was amazing. And I hope in some way that I impacted one of those kids. And I sat back and I talked to each one of them, listening to their stories. And one resident was there for a long time. I think she was there for about 7 years now or something. And just to hear her story, you know, and to let them know that you too can, you know, overcome this. Just, you know,
like this history that you have is not necessarily your destiny. You can define your own destiny, but with the help of people like Bill and other council members that you have, counselors at Murray Moss.
Yes, definitely. Most definitely.
And so it's just, that's amazing. I'm going to get a caller in on this. The number is 210-614-8980 if you want to join our conversation as we talk about Roy Moss and local efforts to aid abused, neglected, and sex trafficked youth here in Bexar County. And Ron is on the line. Ron, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Well, thank you very much. First, congratulations, Joe, for turning your life around, and congrats to Roy Moss for helping to make that happen. But I'm curious, you said the new emergency shelter is going to cost or has cost over $1 million. Where does the money come from to support all these programs to help Texas kids?
All right. Ron, thank you for the call. Appreciate it. And Bill Wilkinson.
Sure. So as far as the actual physical construction of the new bridge, we did receive a $750,000 grant from the Charity Ball Association. Here in San Antonio, they've been helping kids for over 60 years with a whole variety of needs. And we also received $500,000 from the Valero Energy Foundation. And the rest of it was, you know, raised from individual donors. As far as our programs are concerned, they come from a variety of sources, mostly state and local government agencies, but typically it only accounts for about 70% of the actual cost of running programs. So we depend on individual donors to you know, generously support us on those other areas.
So the state will place a child with Roy Moss, is that how it works? And then they will provide certain amount of funding for that child for you to provide those services, but it doesn't exactly cover everything.
It doesn't, because the amount, the intensity of the services that we have to provide, the number of staff that we have to have available to be within licensing requirements that are designed to protect the kids, don't allow us to do certain things like infrastructure, you know, repairing bathrooms and all of that. So we have to raise money to deal with the infrastructure piece, because the money that we get from the state and from local government is really focused on services delivered to kids.
Can you imagine anyone trying to make it on what the state provides? I mean, it's not reasonable, is it?
Not compared to what we see from other states. We know there are a variety of budget priorities, but I've always said that you can tell what somebody's priority is by actually looking at how they spend their money.
Manisa Morales, you're the deputy chief with the Bexar County Juvenile Probation Department. Yes. Can you talk about your relationship with Roy Moss?
I've been with the department for 32 years, and for 32 years I've been working very closely with them. You know, not every kid needs to be detained. Sometimes, like they were mentioning, you know, there's a child who just can't just go home. So Roy Moss provides some assistance. But most recently, the newest initiative we have with them is we received some money from the governor's office. They awarded about $9 million across the state, and we were very fortunate to receive a grant for about $877,000. And we're going to start Centro Seguro, which is a drop-in center for traffic victims, at the old Roy Moss. So it's perfect timing. They're moving to the new location, and the old location is being renovated for the human sex trafficking victims. We've been involved with human sex trafficking initiative since 2009, when the human trafficking task force began, and Bexar County, and especially juvenile probation, is very involved with the Alamo Area Coalition Against Trafficking. And so through there, we had a dream to find a location or build a location for human sex trafficking victims. And we were going to call it the Alamo Youth Center. So that was the dream of the coalition. Well, we had this opportunity, and so we didn't have to build a brand new location. Roy Moss has a facility, and so the funding that we receive from the governor's office will go directly for services to the human sex trafficking victims. It will be open Monday through Friday from 10 p.m. to 6 a.m. Very non-traditional hours. Someone may think, well, why those hours? Why not during the day? Well, this is when our victims are out in the streets, and sometimes the police officers have stings at motels, and they find these victims.
These are juveniles.
Correct. Correct. They could be doing a sting at a hotel, and they come across some men who have young victims, young females or males. And so sometimes they are charged and they are brought to our detention. So in our opinion, we're kind of victimizing them twice. So this new initiative, when a police officer comes across a victim in the evening, they can come in to the drop-in center and they don't have to be brought over to our detention center. They don't have to be criminalized. They're victims. And on the weekends, the Centro Seguro will be open from 4 p.m. to midnight so that we can have some programming for parents. We're going to do assessment, crisis intervention, individual counseling, group counselings. What we're going to try to do is give them a child's life. Someone robbed that from them and made them human trafficking victims. They have a life that no child should experience and no human should ever experience. So some of the activities that we'll have for them is movie nights, dinner nights, interaction with other kids, interaction with adults who are have good intentions for them, interaction with men. They may think that all men are in a position to hurt them. Well, they need to know that men are good too. So we need to teach them from the very beginning how to be children. We want them to have a lot of fun. We want them to have a structure. We want them to have counseling. And so we are giving them hope that, like the gentleman over here said, there's hope to change. There's hope for the future. Things don't have to stay as they are right now. They've lost their autonomy. They've lost their self-identification, and we're going to try to provide some programming for them.
A lot of special challenges involved in that area. I want to try and learn more about that when we come back from the break. I will also find out more about runaways and children who are also dealing with other forms of abuse and neglect here in Bexar County, and how Roy Moss is reaching out to those children, providing them a bridge. We'll come back with some phone calls. Number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. The source continues after this break. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. What's being done to help children in San Antonio who are abused, neglected, who've been trafficked for sex? What's happening to these at-risk children here? Who's out there willing to help them? It's a tough job. Well, Roy Moss Youth Alternatives is the place to go. And this is where a lot of our local agencies turn to when they have children that they have caught in stings or found on the streets. And where can we take them? Where can they be safe? Where can they find trained counselors who can help these children readjust and back away from a very dark world? We're talking about that this afternoon, and we invite you into our calls. The number is 210-614-8980. Call in with your questions or comments. Maybe you've gone through this world and you've got something you want us to know about. We'd love to hear from you. The number is 210-614-8980. And when we're going to break, we were speaking with Maricela Morales. She is the deputy chief of the Bexar County Juvenile Probation Department. We're talking about the sex trafficking children out there. And I want to get an idea of how many children or how big of a caseload do we have here in Bexar County?
Well, we have three probation officers assigned specifically to trafficking victims, and they carry a caseload of 10 to 13, so that's 30 to 36 children on any given day that have been identified and are active with our Department for Human Trafficking, and that's not including all the others out there that have not been identified. But that one traffic victim is too many.
Sure. We're trying to get a hold on how accurate is that number? That's how many cases you have. How many more are out there? I mean, I've seen some big numbers being released by the state of Texas.
Well, the governor's office is trying to research that right now, and we'll be providing some statistics for them when we open up Centro Seguro. And the numbers out there have been a little bit high. Sometimes I hear 75,000. The governor's office feels more comfortable with 1,000. But again, like I said, if here in San Antonio we have 30 to 36 victims that are active, and if we take a look at other probation departments and the size of San Antonio, that possibly that would be Houston, Dallas, and Fort Worth. So, I mean, if you start looking at those numbers in your head, that's a lot. But, I mean, I can't give you a definite number until the governor's office comes up with a more close to the accurate number.
And one of the things that happens with the numbers, too, is that they almost have to make a positive declaration that they've been sex trafficked in order for them to be identified as sex trafficked, when, in fact, a lot of these kids basically think they're just having survivor sex. They don't see themselves as victims. They see themselves as
Tell me what is the difference between the survivor. This is Bill Wilkinson, the CEO of Roy Moss Youth Alternatives. So I know you've seen a lot, so you're an authority here. What's the difference between survivor sex and sex trap they're basically being prostituted, is that it?
Yeah, from a legal definition, if you are under the age of 18 and you have a pimp or a trafficker who is peddling you, that is the definition of child sex trafficking. However, when a child is engaged in the process, and this is the only person who's ever shown them any love, who buys them nice things, who does things that their families never did for them.
But they're being manipulated.
They are. But they don't necessarily see it that way, and it takes time for them to realize, as they get tangled up in this web and the relationship becomes more and more abusive, then they start to become aware that, oh, this is definitely not good for me. This is definitely a problem. But the traffickers they're like Machiavellis. They hold a lot of power over these kids, and they exercise it regularly.
That sexual power is a currency of this realm, this dark realm that they live in. And I imagine maybe some of these children who are being trafficked feel like they have that sexual power and that they're using it to their benefit, but actually they're being manipulated, they're being treated like a commodity, and that they're disposable once they're no longer able to provide, they're raising money, they're making money for somebody.
Those services, that's absolutely true. And then they have various ways, traffickers have ways that they keep hold of kids. You know, the story that I find most detestable is they will impregnate the girl, have a baby, they will have the baby live with the trafficker's family, and if the girl tries to get out of the life, they'll say, you're never going to see your baby again.
They do that?
Yep.
Does that like happen once, or it happens like?
It happens regularly enough that is a story that is heard.
What about getting children addicted to drugs? Is that something to do?
Yeah, I think so. I don't know what, Marcella, what your experience has been, but very low levels, kind of titrated doses that's just enough to blunt the senses so that they can still engage with what they have to do, but not be so out of it that they can't do it.
They remove the child, who is the human trafficking victim. It's a child. And a lot of times people see them as something different, as we don't call them prostitutes because they went with this perpetrator. They are children.
They're victims.
Victims. And so anyway, they remove them from the family. They provide a home. They provide affection, even though it may come with abuse. The child may have removed herself or himself from a family that was being abusive. And so the pimp gets a lot of power over this child, and they lose their identity.
Now, Joe Macomba, I know this is not your world, but you were at the bridge shelter, and you've seen a lot of dark things, and maybe you can help me understand a little bit about how hard it is to reach out and connect with children who have gone through this type of manipulation. I mean, how hard is it for a child to come out of that darkness?
Like what Maricel was saying, because a lot of it kind of goes hand in hand, where it's kind of, it's a lot to go forward and ask for help. It's what I consider normal, or what any other kid would consider normal.
Is it the trust factor?
It's a trust factor. Like, automatically, like for me, for example, I know I share this story with a lot of people. I know that I was sexually abused, and that it was very difficult for statistics, depending on what studies you see, that males that come out and say it's not normal, it's not rare. You feel like you're, makes you feel less. And so people like me, I would say for myself, it took a lot for me to kind of come out and say that. And I didn't accept it until way after, when I was in my 30s, or, you know, late 30s. It took a long time. And so a lot of kids that are going through this, it's new, they're scary, they don't know what to do. It's because of the environment. It's just trusting people. That's why, how do you build that trust is by communicating with people at Meadowlands, residential treatment facilities. I myself was in several foster homes. I was not, I was kind of pushed out through them, I'd say about three or four of them. Their thing was that I was always unruly. Yeah. They used to come pick me up with my, you know, from my house with a bag of clothes. I would end up, that's how I ended up in Meadowlands, was provided life skills. They taught me what I needed to know, and I applied that later in life when I joined the military, because that type of setting, staying on a ship, you know, birthing with other people, living with other people, certain things that they taught me there, it was not new to me. I was familiar with it, so it was a little bit better.
Okay.
So,
That's incredible, Joe. Thank you so much. Let me get a caller in on this conversation. The number is 210-614-8980. If you can join our conversation, that would be great. Michael is on the line. Hey, Michael, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you, David, Martin Davies. I'm listening to this conversation, and I'm wondering, you know, you got a lot of professionals that deal with the issue, but me as just a public citizen, how would I recognize the trafficking victim or the trafficking victim situation if I saw it? And then what should I do? What would be my next step to deal with it? And that's basically it.
Michael, thank you for the call. Maricela Morales?
Well, one of the things is that we've noticed, there's whenever there's a young child, and I'm talking about 12, 13, with older men hanging out at bars or visiting the neighbor, you know, a lot of younger children always around an adult male, or something just looks different. I mean, I'm not saying that every situation is a trafficking situation, but I think we just have to be more alert for red flags, something that just doesn't seem right. When some of these victims come through our department, they come in at our intake, and our intake may not pick it up because they don't make an outcry. Somewhere along the whole continuum of services with this is when they make an outcry. But let me tell you this, there is a conference that is being held at the Norris Center on September 15th from 8:30 to 4:30, and it's for $15, and it's going to provide some education for the community. I think it's going to hold about 400 people, and if you Google the Alamo Area Council Against Trafficking, you will find some nonprofits where you can go to awareness sessions where they will talk about what are the key things you should look at? What are the red flags?
How do you feel about, I mean, here we are having this conversation. Is it important that we have these conversations?
Yes.
And talk frankly about this?
Yes. What we try to do through the Alamo Area Coalition Against Trafficking is we have nonprofits, universities, schools, hospitals, all the law enforcements from the U.S. Attorney General's office to the DA to the police department, and we're trying to bring awareness to the community.
Okay, we're going to continue our conversation. We've got one more break coming up. Our phone lines are open. If you got a question, a comment, if you have a life story to tell us, we'd like to hear it. Others can learn from your experience. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. The Source continues after this one-minute break. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Local efforts to aid abused, neglected, and sex trafficked youth. That's our topic this afternoon, 210-614-8980 for if you want to call in. But so one of the holds, it seems like that a pimp or somebody who's manipulating someone who's being trafficked is this notion that the child is now damaged goods and that no one will ever want you. You are now an outcast. And so Bill over at the Roy Moss Youth Alternatives, Bill Wilkinson, he's the CEO there. I mean, is that part of the process is to get rid of that imaginary barrier on someone saying, no, that's no longer true. You have value. Even though you went through this, you are still a child with value and hopes and dreams, and we want to bring that back. Is that it?
Absolutely. And we, you know, when we talk about how we're going to do this transition, we do it right at Jump Street. So juvenile probation, they may come up at juvenile probation or at the police station. We're going to have a bag of clothing for that kid. We're going to get them out of the clothes that they are being required to wear. We're going to put them in a sweatsuit or a kid's clothes. We're going to give them a stuffed animal. We're immediately going to say, when you walk into this new building where you don't know anybody, you're not going to be looked at as a prostitute. You're going to be seen as a child. And you can actually see their countenance change when they're allowed to become a child again.
And you want them to be there, and you welcome them.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Their worth is not determined by any of this stuff.
Here's a caller. This is Eva. And Eva, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hey.
I'm a little nervous. Sorry.
It's all right.
I just wanted to say that my brothers grew up in Meadowland back in the early 90s. We were very fortunate that even though we got separated going into the foster care system, my foster family found me 7 days after I joined the foster care, and it was my one and only family. They adopted me as an adult, but my brothers, they made sure that we were close contact, and because of that, I think Meadowlands teaching them how to be adults when they got out was also a big help. My brother, one of them, lives in Oklahoma, has a family, and then I have a brother that lives here with us, and he goes to colleges. I mean, just we're very well-rounded people because of Meadowlands and because of my family. So we were just very fortunate. I just wanted to let y'all know that.
Eva, thank you for calling in. We appreciate you telling us that story. Joe McComba, so there was this process when you age out of the foster care system, you basically need some more help, right?
Yes, especially when I was phased out. I was kind of just, here you go, age 17, graduated from high school, and I was at the Presbyterian Children's Home. That was at the last, I was there for 1 year, graduated, and then I kind of became homeless. couldn't find a place, but now I know that Meadowlands, they have what's called Turning Point, and Bill can talk about that, but I think that's amazing. That's something that I found out throughout the years, that now they have something where the child needs to request to have extended stay up till, I think it's age 19 or 20, but the child has to ask themselves.
So Bill,
what
is Turning Point?
Turning Point is a transitional living center of 5 houses behind our facility in San Antonio, and the kids live in homes. They're helped by case managers. They get counseling. But if you've aged out of foster care or if you're homeless, we will take you and we will work with you for up to 18 months to do everything from, I mean, we have kids who come into the program whose parents refuse to give them their birth certificates. So we have to go up to the state to get birth certificates for these kids. So everything from making sure their ID is squared away, to they have a GED, to they're going to college, getting a job. We have some partners who've been very generous. ANSERA has been working with us lately on job training for a couple of our residents. And again, it's this whole village thing.
Another caller. This is Bernard. Bernard, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yes, sir. I just wanted to say that I spent many years working in social services and working with kids who've been through pretty tough stuff. And the one thing that I kind of recognized over and over again was that there seemed to be a lot of different points throughout many kids' histories where there was at least one adult who might have recognized that something was off, like the young lady had said earlier, and didn't feel like it was their business to get involved. And I just want to reinforce the fact that when it comes to each other, we're all each other's business, and we shouldn't be afraid to get involved for the sake of taking care of somebody else. That's all I wanted to say.
Well, I'm glad you did, Bernard. Thanks for calling and appreciate it. So, Joe Macomba, you're a former resident of the bridge. You were nodding your head in agreement?
Oh, yes, most definitely. I think that's what it takes. It takes someone to just like, it takes everybody, one voice, just one person, just stop and ask the child, hey, how's your day going? What's going on? That can make a big difference. And Roy Moss did that. I remember because I was there at Meadowlands when Roy Moss used to work there, when he was there.
So the man, Roy Moss.
The man, Roy Moss himself.
What was he like?
A guy with athletic. He was healthy. I remember just eating wheat pancakes. I mean, this guy, you talking about nutritional value. That's where I got most of my healthy eating habits. It's different than being at home where I eat something that's not good for you, you know. But that's what I
Yeah, so but back to the topic from the caller about seeing somebody that may be not off. So, Bill, what would you recommend?
Well, the one that I think of the most in terms of child sex trafficking is cell phone use. Kids today are always on their cell phones. If you're in a hotel and you see two or three girls with an older man on an elevator and they don't have their cell phones out or they're not giggling with each other or that type, and it's midnight, there's a pretty good possibility there's an issue there. That's the kind of thing that you can mention to a hotel employee or something like that. You're really not comfortable with what you're seeing, particularly if they're leaving the hotel. So it's that kind of what has become normal behavior. When you notice that it's missing, that's when you should have a flag go off.
Maricela Morales over at the Bexar County Juvenile Probation Department. What kind of stories do you hear?
Well, lots of stories. We have this restore court where the three probation officers are involved with the traffic victims. We have stories where someone's mama was, her mother was a dancer at a bar. And so, you know, the mother's wondering, well, why isn't my child doing okay? What's all this problem? Why is she attracted to this person? Why is she away from home? And then we find out she's being trafficked. Well, a lot has to do with the family and the things that they do and they use to bring up their children. It was a sad story with that young lady because her father got her involved in heroin. They shot up together. Those are things that affect a child's life for a long time. And when we open this Centro Seguro, we're going to be dealing with victims who have a lifelong of needing help and counseling. We're not going to be able to fix someone overnight or in a few months or in a few years. It's going to take their whole life because they've really been affected by the perpetrator.
So, Bill, later today you'll be cutting the ribbon on the new bridge facility. But what will this mean for your capacity? Are you still going to be, you know, struggling to find places for people? Do you still need more? What's happening?
Well, I think that we're diversifying the types of kids that we're helping. So we'll help the traditional emergency placement, but because of the the generosity of people like George and Kim Rapier and the Charity Ball Association, our old facility, we're going to be able to upgrade so that we can actually help more kids. So we're basically going to end up close to doubling our capacity. It's just the type of kids will be a little bit different. They'll be more therapeutically intensive, and they'll require more wraparound services and just more general intensity on how we work with them.
So, but if you had a blank check and you had to guess, what more do you need?
Well, if I had a blank check, obviously I'd finish the renovations at the new
So you still got some work to do.
Oh my gosh, yes, yeah. We've only got about 30% of the funds we need to do the renovation work. So we're still looking for another $300,000 to $350,000 to do that renovation work. So.
And that would just, help you serve more kids or put them in a more complete home-like environment?
All of those things, exactly. More of a home-like environment improves our level of service and make sure the kids are safe and secure.
So since 1976, over 11,000 children have stayed at the Bridge Emergency Shelter. And y'all are just going to keep on going?
Yeah, I mean, we wish somebody would put us out of business, but right now, unfortunately, that is not where we are.
And so what happens next?
Well, what happens next is we really focus on kicking off the child sex trafficking work that we're going to be doing. We're going to be doing a lot more community outreach to get that done. And we're inviting everybody to participate because this is one of those areas that, if you think something's wrong, you have to call in. And we'll have a hotline for that as well. So we'll be able to accept calls on a hotline.
So the former bridge was on West Avenue, and the new bridge is where?
Right next door on West Avenue.
Right next door.
Exactly.
So it's in the same neighborhood.
Exactly.
So you can still remember the old furniture store and where you used to be.
Exactly. Right in Delview where they've been great neighbors to us for, 30 years.
All right. Well, I want to thank our guest, Bill Wilkinson. He is the CEO of Roy Moss Youth Alternatives. Also with us is Maricela Morales, the deputy chief of the Bexar County Juvenile Probation Department. And we're joined by Joe McComba. He is the retired Navy chief petty officer, former resident of the Bridge Shelter. I'm David Martin Davies. This is The Source. Thanks for tuning us in.